on this episode of Movies Ruin My Life, a film series that you guys talk to us about quite a bit. So which is a superior film? Ridley Scott's Alien or James Cameron's Aliens? So this is Jesse.
Hello there.
This is Dave.
Hello.
That's Devin.
Hello.
I'm Brandon. And this is our Alien versus Aliens episode. And the reason this is a versus is because really do we have to get into the other films, gentlemen, at all? Like, there's no way that anyone's picking their favorite in the series is like Alien versus Predator or
AVP
something like
two.
That.
AVP 2. AVP
2. Yeah.
That's just not canon.
Predator 2 was my favorite.
Of the aliens?
Of the alien movies. Go Danny Glover.
Well, yeah, Predator 2 is pretty sweet.
Yeah. Gary Busey. Okay, we're off topic already.
We're already off topic.
All right, no more shitty films. Go Alien.
Yeah, so like the big argument here, and why actually I really hate that we have to do the, or that we are doing this episode, but I think it'll be fun, so I'm on board with it. Is that they are two very distinctly different films. One is a horror film, and in all seriousness, one of my favorite sci-fi horror films of all time, and then the other is an action film, more or less a sci-fi action.
Rambo 2.
Yeah. So it is such an interesting conversation piece because so many people do put them head to head, and you know it almost hurts my feelings because I like both of them for such different reasons. But we are going to try and quantify it here today, and you know crown one as the best of the two films. Before we get into it, Dave, I know you've watched these films like 400 times each.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah,
close to at least.
Yeah. And also, obviously, we've gotten in previous episodes into our love for Michael Biehn.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
And I love that he is a replacement on this film.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is.
Possibly because of a drug issue, possibly because of quote-unquote creative differences, who will ever know. But he's phenomenal in number two. And my two favorite performances probably, you know, in terms of the supporting cast, are him in two and then probably John Hurt getting his fucking chest exploded in one. Just two actors that you know, for me, that mean an awful lot, respectively. Can we do a quick round of favorite characters for both films just to get us a little bit warmed up? Give me your favorite character from one and why, your favorite character from two and why, et cetera, et cetera.
Number one, I know it's lame, but I have to go with Ripley. She's just so badass.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the movie, if you didn't know who she was going in, you wouldn't know if she'd be the hero of the film.
Yeah, it's,
which
it's
is kinda
so
cool.
Good.
And, yeah, originally it was supposed to be like a male hero and stuff. And during the rewrites, they kind of went that direction.
Mm.
And which obviously launched an action heroine for the ages kind of thing. And she's done many films since then.
Absolutely.
I gotta go with Ripley.
For both or just?
I'd say both as well.
Yeah.
Because actually, in number two, the more I watch it, I find I don't like most of the characters in it.
Yeah.
I find it is a bit over the top. And as a kid, I thought it was great, but, I don't know. It just didn't vibe for me as much the last time I watched it.
Really?
Yeah.
I do love the Ripley character. You know, Bishop's a close third, I guess, after,
yeah.
You know. But I got to stick with Biehn.
Yeah.
I'm going to argue for Biehn. Change the topic of the show. Biehn's the man.
He's definitely my favorite of the commando type characters in the second one, for sure.
Totally.
Right on.
Dave?
For the first one, I'm going to go with Captain Dallas.
Yes.
Not only because he's got the best beard, like the perfectly trimmed, not a speck of gray. It's just phenomenal. Like looking at him, he's like the poster boy for I don't even know. I can't even finish that sentence. He's so good. But I also, like that aside, I like the fact that he's a captain of a mining ship, right? Which is not supposed to encounter any sort of violence or any sort of, what would you call it? Like military type operations. And then when the parasite gets on board, he kind of takes charge and you can tell he's scared to death and he has no training, nothing to do, but I feel like he does do a good job and he steps it up. And, you know, people kind of trust in him and up until he's dead or cocooned or whatever you want to say. But, yeah, I'll go with him for number one. And then number two, I do agree with them all being a little bit over the top, mm-hmm. but it's kind of hard to get beside it. Like, Bill Paxton's great, but it's just too much. I just want to slap him. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because he'd be the worst guy to have in a crisis. Like,
he just becomes, like, the biggest, like, pussy.
He loses it way too fast in that movie. It's like, dude, you're supposed to be trained for this shit, and you're already freaking out.
Yeah.
But I do love that they do such a great job of foreshadowing that, you know, with him just razzing Vasquez endlessly and so forth.
I'm going to go with Vasquez, actually. Yeah. She's, like, the toughest bitch ever. I love her to death. Oh, man. And she's got that big smart gun wrapped around her. Oh, it's so hot.
Yeah. Which isn't that some kind of, like, they made that out of a Steadicam.
It was a Steadicam thing, Just put a big gun on the end of it.
Yeah, because she probably couldn't lift the fucking thing. So they're like, here you go. Wrap this around
you. Well, they both have them, yeah.
Yeah, Drake's got one, too.
It's a pretty cool design, actually.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Vasquez for number two.
Nice. Devin?
For number one, I'm going to take the obvious pick that you guys missed, the alien. Balaji
Banero. Well, I didn't know we could pick alien. Him.
Yeah.
Dude doesn't show until halfway through the movie.
You always remember.
It's true.
It was Balaji Badeo. He's literally 6'10".
Yeah.
He's
just a
monster, man. Didn't they find him
in a bar or something? And they're like, do you want to be in a movie? Here, wear this and sweat in this rubber suit. Oh, okay.
Perfect.
And I heard that he was really campaigning to be in the second one. Like, he wanted to be the alien in all the movies, and they just kind of cast him aside. And
because they wanted to go with more aliens.
Yeah, they wanted more aliens. And he thought, oh, well, I'm the alien. I'm going to be in all the alien movies. And just didn't work out for him.
The third one, he was replaced by a computer.
Yeah.
sorry to cut you off there.
No.
I had to go that way.
And actually, one more character from Alien I just remembered is Harry Dean Stanton's character.
Harry Dean Stanton is amazing in that film.
Like, he's just, he's probably my second favorite character in that. And just the whole thing with, like, the cat and stuff. And he's got this, like, little relationship with his little buddy there. And and the classic scene where he gets eaten is just, you know, it's probably one of my favorite, like, horror pieces of the film.
Absolutely.
It hits all the beats that are pretty perfect.
Yeah. And you know that he's going. He's going, but still, it doesn't make it any easier.
He walks into that room, and it's like the chains are hanging down with water coming down, which doesn't make any sense. And apparently that was one of the things that Ridley Scott had to fight for. The studio was like, well, why are these chains hanging, and why is there water dripping from it? And no purpose of being on the ship.
It's like a cooling tower.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, it looks cool, and let's do it.
Yeah, it's like a cooling tower with a reactor.
There you go.
That's what I just say. Blame that.
Okay, perfect.
Right. Back to number two character.
Number two, I'm going to go with Paul Reiser as...
What a
dick. just the best asshole.
He's the real villain.
Yeah. Good one. That's good. I'm surprised you didn't go with Newt.
They mostly come at night. Mostly.
Mostly. I just love, my favorite is when, like, it doesn't even benefit him whatsoever, but he's running away, and he decides to, like, lock the door behind him first off, you were in the protection of a bunch of mercenaries. You already know there's, like, hundreds of aliens here.
Yeah.
And then you just run off on your own. And then second of all, it doesn't even benefit you to fuck them over at this point. But he still just, like locks the door on his way out and then immediately dies. Of course you did, Paul Reiser. What were you thinking?
I love how you just refer to him as Paul Reiser.
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh fuck!
I love what he's trying to convince Ripley too. He's a real Paul Reiser at that point. Like, just in care. Like, it's how I like to imagine Paul Reiser is in real life. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, he had a string of great films around this time too. Like, I really like Crazy People. I don't know if you guys are fans of that film with Dudley Moore and
I can't remember.
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Dudley Moore's got all the fucking, he's making crazy ads, like, you know, what is it, Jaguar, for people who like hand jobs from women they hardly know, like all these, like, truthful ads, you know, and he again plays that kind of fucking dick character that like gets his friend committed and all of these things. It's
maybe it's not the character. It's just you're right. It's been, just how been, Paul Reiser is. Yeah. He's a rolls. Conniving asshole.
They're rewriting these scripts to fit him better.
Yeah. Just what do you want me to do on the film? Just be yourself, Paul. We know you're going to fuck everybody over anyway. You're not going to read the script. You're just going to be a complete asshole. So just be Paul Reiser. And Paul Reiser as himself. Fucking perfect.
Before we get into the first one, gentlemen, I would like to talk about The Alien in all seriousness, yeah. Since you already started, Devin. For me, The Alien, in a lot of ways, is almost, is like the...
It's a male, because they bang the queen, right?
Oh, true, yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. thank you for putting that in context for me.
Just so we're all, like, clear here.
Okay, perfect.
They could be like bees, though, right? We don't know if they're not like bees.
Well,
we don't know if they're not like bees.
They very well could be.
Well, they could be like bees.
Well, I like my theory better if they all get in line. Oh, all right. Am I still welcome here?
Like,
you guys want me to go? Or?
Where do you even put it?
Yeah. Oh, you'll find somewhere. She's got four hands, buddy. And two mouths. At least two mouths.
Queen alien gangbang.
Perfect. Oh, I like how you said in all seriousness, and then I just took over and stole that. Nope.
In all seriousness, queen alien gangbang.
They all run a train on her.
Is that Alien 5? Is that...
Yeah, Alien 5, the train.
Oh, pig roast.
Oh, fuck.
Wow.
Well, that's off topic.
Thanks for having me, man. This has been real fun.
I just wanted to fucking say that it's become the mythos has transcended the films itself, much in the way that, say, for example, a Michael Myers or a Jason Voorhees, these kinds of characters have, or even like the Terminator, something like that, where you have this idea of this unstoppable force. And it's just, for me, it's fucking terrifying. Also, kind of, there's this part of me that respects it because, you know, I have trouble completing any task. You know, I just want to kind of fucking do something else, like chill out and watch Alien. But in any case, I love that kind of villain, and it's done so fucking well here. Now, obviously, as you get into the later films, they have all the theories on, like, you know, why the xenomorphs look fucking different from film to film because they're interacting with different species and so on, which is really interesting. Not just that we, you know, had a different costume designer and different art department, but yeah, okay, we'll go with it.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the alien. Like, it's a pretty fucking amazing character.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be here if I didn't like it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's one of the best character designs in, like, Hollywood history, in my opinion. H.R. Giger killed it.
I think we have a poster around here somewhere, a Giger poster around here. Just some of his fucking art is just next level shit. Yeah. Amazing. And just that man's mind, I don't even know how it would function.
And it's kind of interesting that... Alejandro Jodorowsky was going to make his version of Dune, and pretty much the creative team that was on that, when that movie got canceled, they went and did Alien.
Alien, yeah.
So it's like, if that movie got made, maybe Alien would never existed, or would have looked completely different. So
that would have been, that's terrifying to think.
Terrifying to think that the Alien as we know it might not be.
Yeah.
Fuck. Ooh. Got the shivers there.
Oh, wow. Thanks for bumming me out, Jesse.
I know, man. We're living in a world without the alien. Jeez.
It's just E.T.
Steven Spielberg's Alien.
Gross.
Very different film.
Dave, your thoughts on the alien?
I can't get over what I just heard. Well, okay, so my thoughts on the actual design of it, or
and its role in, like, it's become so transcendental in culture. Like, you see it pop up in fucking cartoons and the Simpsons and shit. You know, it's amazing.
Actually, the first time I saw the alien, it was in Tiny Toons.
Yeah,
and they did like a parody of it, and I was like, "Whoa, cool!" And I asked my parents what it was, and someone mentioned that it was from the movie Alien, and that's why. first learned there was a movie called Alien. It was from Tiny Toons.
Wow.
So it's interesting how even like kids' cartoons, they're putting this character in there.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think when the third movie came out, they had, like, a whole toy line, which mm-hmm. is, like, these are R-rated movies, but they're selling toys to children.
Yeah, we were talking yeah. about the Terminator episode, RoboCop toys, Terminator
yeah,
toys.
And, like, RoboCop, not to go down that road, but that's a pretty violent movie. Like,
yeah, that's
no kid should be watching yeah. that movie.
We already talked about my feeling on their blood squibs, just, like, yeah. never wow. done better in Hollywood again.
Best squibs of all yeah. time.
Fuck, man.
Back to your question, though. I like the... Obviously, I like the design of the alien. It's terrifying, and like especially at first, if you haven't seen it before, the first movie is very dark, so it's you don't really get a good look at it till the end. But I really like that the facehugger design, the like spider crab yeah. thing. It's terrifying, and but except like when they look underneath it, it looks very sexual or something. I don't know if it's supposed to look like that, but that's Geiger's mind going a little crazy there. it looks I don't know, but I love the way. The tail like wraps around the throat and you know cuts the oxygen off and only allows so much in that the host requires to survive
yeah
and then you can't get it off because the grip is just so powerful. I love the idea of it. I like the idea of the, you know the host and even the chest burster, you know it's fun.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind
of
cool.
Didn't take me out of the film.
No, I
even seeing it so yeah. many years removed from the actual, yeah. you know, and knowing what could be done at that time with like, because when we were kids, like T2 was coming out and things
right.
like that. It still looked amazing. Still looks amazing yeah. now.
Very cool. One of the yeah. best scenes.
Yeah, the first one now it kind of looks weird. You can see, like the metal teeth. It looks almost like you can see strings and shit. But you know, the second one for sure because it's the way they showed it. I think it was a better design. It had arms and stuff. But the other thing that's confusing about the
well, we're going to get into that in a minute because I disagree wholeheartedly.
But really quick, the chest burster thing. The only thing that's confusing is like how come in like 42 seconds it becomes a full-grown adult? That must be the most painful growth spurt of all time. Yeah. Could you imagine that? Like growing pains?
That's why it's so pissed off.
Oh,
and geez. It's hungry.
Oh,
I'm a teenager.
Because in the first one, I don't think it eats anything. I don't think it eats anything until it's full grown.
Full grown.
So what the hell? Imagine that. You just come out of like your host and then you're just constantly, I can't think about that. That would hurt. But anyway, yeah.
Your host, a.k.a. mom.
Oh yeah, sure. You just as soon as you come out within 5 minutes, you're my size now. She's like, "Holy fuck, you're disgusting! I can't believe you were in there." Oh,
do you have any thoughts on the aliens?
I mean, one of the details that I've always liked about it is that looking at it, it's like there's almost no no basis for its sensory kind of perception of you. Like, it's got no eyes, it's got no ears, it's got seemingly no nose, and yet it finds exactly where you are and then kills you there. Like, how scary that thought is, that you don't even know how it's doing it. And you know, in some movies they'll have, you know, like in Predator, the heat vision idea,
yeah.
or in... you know, in some movies they'll make like the big ears or something like that, and it'll be suggested that it can hear where you are, or
they'll show like a view supposed to be of the creature. Or
yeah,
so then you're like, oh, it uses heat. Okay,
they kind of fucked that up in 3, I guess, with the alien
using the regular camera and then just rolling it around the tunnels and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, I don't think it can see like that, but you know, I see what they're doing.
Yeah, but, that is a. I am a big fan of like killer POV shots, like and we'll get to it down the road. I know you want to get in on that some of the early Canucksploitation stuff, fucking Black Christmas. Love that shit, and that's one of the first killer POVs. But yeah, it does not fucking work at all mm-hmm. for Alien, which is why it's not part of this fucking Versus episode for Alien 3.
It's just a great scary idea that you don't know how you can hide from this thing because you don't know how it's finding you to begin with.
Yeah,
like that's a great maybe unintentional
you're right.
I don't know, maybe an unintentional coincidence.
It's the ideal hunter, really.
Yeah.
You don't know. As you said, you don't know how to defend yourself from it. And its camouflage in the dark is pretty...
pretty solid, yeah.
The fact that it kind of moves through, like, the corridors and stuff and the vent systems, it could be anywhere. It could get around the ship, no problem. And you don't really know... You can't really hear it when it's moving and stuff. So it's The Silent Predator.
Like, one thing that's confusing, though, is I don't want to, like, shit on this movie at all. Like, trust me. I'm going to say something that I don't mean to be, like... Anyway, whatever.
We know how much you love this film.
What I don't understand these films. Is at the beginning of Alien, the lights are on and they show the pods of them waking up. So there are lights on the ship, but nobody at least in that turns room. The lights on. Because that would help a lot. Maybe it's fucking blind in the light. Maybe it's, you know, one of those.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know, because the camouflage in the chains, it's because it's fucking dark. If they're looking for it and they turn the lights on, like, oh, there's a big fucking alien right there. Better fucking go this way, you know what I mean? Mm. So, I don't know. But again, I don't want to.
Well, how big is the Nostromo?
Oh, it's
like,
a city.
It's gigantic. Big.
It's huge.
And I mean, we're talking about a freight company. Like, this isn't, you know. So, like,
I guess you're right. It's like a refinery. They're always dark.
And it's very possible that that room is just lit completely differently.
Yeah, just so when people wake up,
they're
not like,
oh. Same as the kitchen. The kitchen's well lit.
That's true. And the fucking, thank God, the fucking ER is fucking operating.
Yeah, you don't want to really.
Yeah, they're trying to do surgery in the dark. They're like, how do we get this off? Do I stab him in the eye like I just did by accident?
I got a flashlight over here.
What are we talking about again?
The alien?
Right. Man, this happens every time I'm here. I just get so caught up in something. It's fun.
Yeah.
What's that?
All right, gentlemen, you want to get into the first film?
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right, so 1979, Ridley Scott's Alien. Beautiful film.
Yeah.
Love this film. I can't fucking lay enough praise on it. What do we got here? IMDb has it at 8.5, Metacritic at 83, Rotten Tomatoes 97%.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes knows where it's at on this one.
Yeah.
They were paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, 8.5 is a fantastic score on IMDb.
Not good enough. Not for that movie, not for 1979. Nope.
Yeah, exactly. That's
no way.
That's the thing. And we've talked about Metacritic sometimes, a lot of the times when you have people, because they're collecting reviews nationwide, so you end up with these critics that generally review art house pieces, you know, doing a quick review for a local paper or something like that on Alien, and you end up skewing the numbers so heavily that I only really use that site. I use that site heavily, but to just sift through reviews, not to look at the scores. And that score is 83. So that's actually like 140% on any other site, in all seriousness, because there's probably a ton of fucking people who don't like this kind of movie at all that had to just write something about it because they're being fucking paid to.
Or they watch like a TBS version of it and they're like, well, that's your problem right there, all censored. And they didn't actually watch the Blu-ray.
All right. So let's get into it, gentlemen. I already said that. Let's actually do it this time.
Oh, okay. Sweet.
There's a lot to talk about. We've already touched on that great opening sequence, or rather the first scene that you see humans, where you see Ian Holm's character kind of going around and waking everybody up and them getting out. And at this point in the film, in all seriousness, like, I assumed that either, John Hurt or Tom Skerritt were the lead.
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver, who? You know, I'm fucking 8 years old when I first see this film, which probably explains a lot. And it blew my mind, like you said, Jesse, when we got that kind of bait and switch, and you realize pretty quickly, of course, that John Hurt maybe isn't going to make it.
No, he's going. He's the first.
He's not
one
making
to go.
The best decisions here. No. But yeah, and you endear yourself to Ripley as she starts to show this strength, you know, I'm not letting you in, all of these things.
Yeah.
But I'm overwhelmed with thoughts. You guys just jump in whenever you want. Amazing cast, visually stunning, particularly for the time. And I am not a Ridley Scott fan, you know, with the, over the years, people have convinced me more and more that he is a good filmmaker. But
his good movies are great, but some of them just aren't so great.
Yeah, I feel like he's a bit haphazard by nature.
Yeah, they're not all winners, but there's some classics in there for sure.
Absolutely. And it's going to make this decision actually very hard for me, because Cameron, although also not my favorite filmmaker, is traditionally a little more consistent. But we'll see what happens. I love the aesthetic, to go back to this opening scene, very almost harkening back to like 2001 or something like that, this white, clean, sterile room, this idea of the future, and then very quickly flipping it on its head and seeing all this like industrial, yeah, gritty, dirty, and seeing how they can coexist. And I've never seen that before, you know, and even now I can't think of anything that does it so well,
yeah,
that has these two worlds coexisting, maybe fucking Blade Runner.
Yeah.
In all seriousness.
The thing I found interesting, it's kind of like a blue-collar crew. They're not scientists. They're not, you know, they're truckers, basically. They're trucking this stuff all over the universe. And it was kind of interesting. Like, the first time they've kind of done that, like, it's traditionally in 50s movies, there was always like these egghead scientist types. And these guys are just hanging out, swearing, smoking cigarettes in space, which is like every scene they're just smoking like crazy, like hacking darts.
Smoke on an airplane.
It's like, yeah, you can't smoke on an airplane. What makes you think you can smoke on a spaceship? So
space cops.
So it takes place in the future, but it's definitely
you gotta roll the window down if you want to smoke in there.
So it's definitely got that 70s blue collar kind of vibe to it, which was pretty cool.
Yeah,
like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I like how they don't, that when they wake up, they think they're home or they're on their way home, or whatever, and then they're eating dinner and someone's like, oh, by the way,
distress call,
something happened, we're only halfway home, so we got to go deal with this. And they're like, fuck.
You know, shit.
I've been sleeping for like 4 years. anyway, so.
Yeah. And you alluded to the dark in this, and when you're talking about the kind of budget that this film was made for,
how much was the budget again?
The budget was $8.4 million, and originally it was only $4.2 million. But the strength of the Ridley Scott storyboards was so strong that the studio was like, "Here's twice as much money."
And $4 million only went into building the derelict, and they're like, "Shit, we spent all the money on the derelict. We forgot about the Nostromo."
Yeah. Yeah, that space jockey set alone was one of the bigger
set. It was the biggest set.
Yeah.
One of the biggest that I can think of.
Yeah.
Apparently part of it like burned down at one point. They had to rebuild some stuff, and that kind of put a bit over budget.
Yeah, and to completely change the subject, because I don't care. The dark is cool, amazing way to save money, but let's get into the space jockey a little bit. And the fact that for fucking 20 years, or more than that, almost 30 years in all seriousness, we were all... in it, like an entire culture just captivated with like, what is this fucking thing?
Yeah,
how long was it sitting there for? Did they ever explain that? Because it's all decomposed, and that distress call has probably been going on for like, you know, 40 years. Because
they don't get to that point in Prometheus, maybe in the upcoming sequel we'll see something.
Clearly been a long time, right? Mm-hmm. For all we know, that signal's been going on since they started their mining project, whatever, I don't know. Mm. Whatever I'm saying makes any sense to anybody, but I know what I'm trying to get at. So it's been there for a long time.
Long fucking time.
Because in Prometheus, it has skin, and in this movie, it's just bones.
Yeah.
So, cool. And then you don't know how big it is, too, because at first it looks big, and then they get right up close, and they're like, oh, it's not that big.
It's still big.
It's still
pretty big. Dude's like 10 feet tall or some shit.
Yeah. And then it's kind of cool that those – the did the derelict, it's kind of like a guess until we know, was it, did the derelict ship pick up these eggs so they could study them?
It's very possible.
Or was there like an infestation on their ship and then the aliens decided to breed there, right? It could have been either way. They could have been researching these things too. Or for all we know, they got one of those facehuggers and it happened to, you know, give birth to 8 million of the damn things or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's kind of...
It's...
If Prometheus is canon, I mean, I guess they made... they made the eggs and they were going to bring
sort of like a weapon
to kill us.
Yeah, they were bringing them to Earth to kill us. Yeah.
But
at the time the alien came out, none of us would know.
Yeah. I'd really like to imagine that Prometheus isn't canon for a
lot
of reasons.
Yeah,
because that way Idris Elba's character that wouldn't exist in the film series, but we would still be alive, and that's that's important to me.
Yeah. Anyway, where were we? Okay, so then what happens? Are we? Oh, we're not going through this.
Yeah, we shouldn't go scene for scene. We've gone down forever. This road.
Okay, yeah, before. We've done this many times, and it's been like 3 hours long.
Do you want to quickly do a round of favorite scenes?
Sure, yeah.
Sure.
Okay. And then maybe we should talk a little bit about the Nostromos in all seriousness as well before we move on.
Sure.
But we'll see. We'll play it by ear. Jesse, you want to kick us off? Favorite scene?
Probably one of my favorites is when it's first discovered that Ash is an android.
Mm. Damn it. I was totally going
to
go there.
Oh, I'll beat you to it, buddy.
I'm sitting in that seat next time.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, I didn't know that was going to happen. And it's just like the craziest shit. All of a sudden, they're knocking this dude's heads off and there's like milk and shit pouring out of him.
Yeah.
And it's actually interesting because I watched it with my roommate about a month ago and he had no idea. Like, he knew nothing about the movie. And he actually pointed something out early in the movie. He's always drinking milk.
Yeah.
And I never noticed that all the times I watched it. And I wanted to tell him, oh, well, wait till you see what happens. I'm like, nope, I'm going to sit with it and see. And then it's a sure thing when it happened. He's like, dude, what the fuck is going on here? Like, this is crazy. And then it really kind of, you get more of an idea that the corporation is really, truly evil, that they put this thing there as a fail-safe to make sure that, you know,
yeah, it knows the whole time why they're on the mission.
Yeah, you can't rely on a human.
And they lied to everybody about what they're doing. Yeah, that's cool.
And just when they got his head up on the table and he's talking, like the special effects are kind of shit when it goes from one to the other. But it's just such an iconic image of just this severed android head talking to them and being all like, "Oh yeah, so this is what's going on." Sorry, and that's my favorite scene.
Yeah, Dave.
Well, the obvious is Sigourney Weaver getting dressed at the end into the space suit.
Also,
and you're
good.
Like, where are we going with this? Like, I'm not going to complain, but, you know. Yeah. No, I'm just fucking around. That was, you know, 70s body is a little, I'm more used to the new wave fucking women.
New wave
if
women.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to probably, I like the scene where Dallas is in the vents.
Yeah.
And they're all panicking. Mm. Because they know that their motion tracker is going off, and he has no fucking idea. And he's obviously, I couldn't imagine how terrified you'd be in a situation like that.
Yeah.
And then you assume he's dead, but turns out he's not. I don't know if you've talked about the director's cut or not, but he's not actually dead.
Oh, yeah?
There's no trace of blood. They mentioned there's no trace of blood.
Yeah.
And then he pops up again at the end, only on the director's cut. But anyway, him running through the tunnels, that was terrifying. That's probably why I'm going to go with that. Is the most stressful part to watch, because the idea of being chased by something like that
you don't like, man. Devin already said that you know how it's tracking you and you know it's going
and
to
then
fucking
when
kill
he
you.
Turns around with the flashlight and it's just there, you're like, oh, like you know that's coming, but it still gets you.
Yeah,
I think it's the first time you really get a good look at the alien as well, when he turns around.
Yeah.
And it's like, up to that point,
yeah,
you really don't really see much. So
a lot of shadows up until that point.
Yeah. A lot of shadows, a lot of darkness.
Which is effective.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing that and we'll get into it shortly, I'm sure, that I would have liked to have seen a little bit more utilized. And I know that you can't put the veil back on. You've already, you know, revealed the alien. You can't have that same impact. But in the second film, as much as it still is very tense for the same kind of reasons, seeing the many aliens so clearly sometimes maybe takes away for me. But I don't know, because I still love it. Like, when you're watching it, you don't think about this shit.
No.
Devin, favorite scene?
I like at the end, after after Ripley activates the self-destruct sequence, I've always really loved just like the atmosphere that creates. I mean, not a specific scene, I guess a whole sequence of just... Like the
when she's trying to cancel it.
No. When like just the self destruct sequence, like sound, like that whoop,
oh,
like, and
ring.
Then the like the calm woman's voice just being like,
just so you know, you're going to die soon. Oh, okay. We should probably change what the computer says.
There's just steam blasting out everywhere. Yeah. There's all those like really kind of dimmed yellow
beacons.
Just everywhere, and it's just. It creates such a heavy tension, like that has really stayed with me. Like that's what I find most memorable about this movie is just that on top of everything, it's like on top of the tension of like, you know, you're running from the alien, on top of like you know, the crew is dead and there was an android trying to kill us and like all of this stuff building up. And now it's like, oh, also the ship is going to blow up and you gotta get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great. My favorite scene has to be the chest burster scene. Like just it's classic. Fucking classic.
Oh yeah.
You know, just, you know, you have everyone's so relieved. You know, when they think Kane's okay and they're all sitting around the table, they're eating and laughing. Having a great time and so forth. And then
he's laughing up until the very last second before he realizes. Fuck.
And then just down on the table, they rip open the shirt and boom, and out it comes. And as much as it
it goes from bad heartburn to death. Like,
yeah, pretty fucking quick.
Yeah. Pass me the Pepto bit. Oh wait, no, this is something else. This is something else. Okay.
But yeah, and then there's something, even though maybe some people argue it doesn't look great, I disagree entirely. There's something just menacing about that, the little fucking
disgusting
alien,
little
running
snake.
Around that fucking weaselly sound it fucking makes, and it's just you're doing that. You're reacting when you're watching the film like there is a small creature fucking running around on the ground. You're putting your feet up on the fucking couch or whatever you're watching it on, and you're freaking out that way. And it's one of the most iconic villain reveals for me.
For sure.
In the genre, for sure. I feel.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that a lot of the cast didn't exactly know what was going to happen when they filmed that. They set up like 4 cameras. They knew something was going to happen, but they didn't know the blood was going to spray in their face.
Yeah, that was
like,
all actual reaction.
Yeah, so a lot of the reaction is just like legit. Like their eyes bulging out and freaking out. That's the actual reaction to it. So,
that's the best way to do something like that. Because you know.
And that is something that I will praise both Cameron and Scott for, is that there, when you go through their filmography and you look at the stories behind the scenes, there are a lot of stories that are reminiscent of exactly that.
Yeah,
they understand, much like we talked about in the Kubrick episode, which there is a slight tie-in with Kubrick with aliens, but a director who understands the human condition. It's like the most important part. Like they almost have to have a little bit of a poet or a musician or something or a painter in them, which obviously Cameron does. Painted the fucking Terminator.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, we tell you. Yeah, this is what I want. Make it.
Is that picture available on the internet? I couldn't find it anywhere.
I don't know, man. I heard it in a fucking Stan Winston interview.
I would love to see.
Did
that.
He draw the naked chick from Titanic too? Because he filmed that.
Yeah, he did draw her. Yeah,
did he?
He did draw.
I was only
her.
Kidding. Yeah. That's totally backfired on him. He draws Linda Hamilton instead. Oops. Oh shit. Oops. Wrong girl.
Cue the music again. yeah, good fucking movie, man. And it's amazing, like, when you look at the size of the cast, you look at the budget, you look at all of the studio pressure, and all the constraints that they're working under, and this film is fucking perfect. It's almost perfect.
I consider it to be a perfect film. It hits all the beats it needs to hit.
Yeah.
It's, aside from slightly bad special effects to the day, but it's still iconic and stuff, so
yeah.
I'd say a perfect movie in my opinion.
I feel like the pacing couldn't be better if you tried.
Oh yeah.
Even though people often say that it lulls because, you know, but that's the intensity, you know, slowly ramping up. That's the most satisfying scare.
The monotony and the boringness of space, you kind of get, you know, you kind of get your guard down and then something's going to come out at you.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
I feel like it's absolutely perfect.
I actually saw it in the theater when they did a re-release, and some jackass behind me was all like, oh, this is so boring. Oh, can we leave? I'm like, oh, dude, just fucking leave.
Yeah,
like,
just shut the fuck up.
Like, come on, some of us are trying to enjoy this here. So, yeah, some people do say that it's kind of the boring one of the series, but...
Yeah,
well,
fuck those
people. Takes
They're
long,
not welcome here.
Yeah.
It takes a long time for them to lay it out. They can't just... Like, it takes 45 minutes before anything happens, and, like, I'm okay with that because it's
so
it's the beginning.
Satisfying.
Yeah, it's a slow
it's
burn.
It's the beginning of the... whole thing. They can't just be like, oh, yeah, so these guys wake up and then, oh, yeah, some thing comes on their spaceship. Like, there's got to be a big buildup. And
you're now the second person to say slow burn on the show, and the first person said it 400 fucking times. So, hey, Nick, how are you? Hashtag slow burn.
Right on.
I get it if you know what's coming. I mean, I certainly would like to just forget the entire movie so that I could watch it again as somebody who has never seen the movie.
Oh, that'd be
again.
A treat.
In the theater to experience it like it was meant to be. Like,
yeah, so like I can understand maybe, you know, somebody from that standpoint being like, you know, well, I know what's going to happen, so what's the point? But even, even then myself, I mean, I can't even picture having that kind of feeling about it. God.
So good. All right, gentlemen, you want to take a little break, come back, and get into Aliens?
Aliens.
Hey.
Cool. Plural.
I just want to take a second and thank you guys for reaching out to us and yelling at us. Please continue to do so. It's your input that led to this episode getting put on the slate, and it means so very much to us every time we get to make a new internet compadre. So, again, thank you. You complete me. All right, so we're back, and let's do it. Aliens. Fuck, man. I love this film. IMDb has it at 8.4, so literally, you know, a tenth of a, like, one decimal point less than fucking Alien. Metacritic has it higher, 87, and Rotten Tomato at 98, 1% higher. On Rotten Tomato.
Well, that's just crazy.
This is, yeah. That's insane.
That's, yeah. I already don't agree with that. Okay.
We've all kind of revealed our position for the end of the episode here.
Well, yeah, it all depends if you're into, you know, action or thriller, really. You know, you know what I mean? It's hard to really compare these movies at all, as we talked about already, and that's the main thing. They're both fantastic. Mm-hmm. It just depends what you're in the mood for.
Yeah. Now, Dave, we already had this discussion, so I apologize, because now you're going to have to do it on microphone.
Oh, yeah. That's.
But I wanted to vent some of my gripes that I had, that we've talked about, both today and, you know, in preparation for this episode, kind of, and you've kind of knocked every single one of them down. So I wanted to kind of go back and
like
and,
in an asshole way or like just like,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I said, what the fuck? And you said, fuck you. And then that was the
really?
End of the conversation. No.
I'm sorry. If that ever happened, I apologize.
But I want to hit some of these points because we've all talked about this now and you guys have shed a lot of light on this film, a film that I do love, but that I've always had some gripes with. The first of which that I wouldn't mind touching on before we get into a round of favorite scenes and so forth is Geiger not coming back to the project. Now, Dave, you talked about issues in the early stages with costumes and so forth, and that this was a contributor to redesigning the fucking alien.
I
or the xenomorph.
I don't remember. So I should know this, but part of me thinks that there is a big that. James Cameron didn't even invite Geiger out for this movie.
Because
he doesn't even thank him. Story. Doesn't even thank him in the liner notes or the credits. Like he does. There's no acknowledgement.
No.
And Geiger's the whole reason James Cameron had what he had to work with.
Exactly.
There was also issues with the molds of the heads from the original one being so smooth they cracked a lot. The fiberglass. Or whatever they were using, so he changed the design slightly. He didn't change the alien. He just made it more rigid, so it was a stronger build.
Yeah.
Maybe Geiger was like, no, that ain't cool.
The shape and so forth.
I don't know, but part of me thinks James Cameron's just a fucking asshole, really. Like,
like I don't want him here. He left this project, didn't he? Like, he wrote half the script and then told them, like, fuck it, I'm going to film Terminator. And then they fucking waited for him.
Yeah.
Like, most directors, and he hadn't directed anything at that point. It's like most fucking writers and directors, if you're like, hey, guys, I'm going to take a piss, they're like, you're fired, we're replacing you.
Right.
And this fucking guy goes and films another goddamn movie.
Well, they read the script and they're like, oh,
We'll wait for you.
They read the first fucking 80 pages or whatever he had. No, 80 pages.
Whatever it was.
just like, yeah, this is great. We'll wait for you.
Yeah.
Well, I guess at that point, they had already waited what? Because the sequel, because you got to figure that's 84, or that's 83, sorry. Yeah, so
7 years,
yeah,
really.
So, yeah, between...
One thing that I was going to mention when we were talking about just the design of the alien, and I wasn't actually even aware that Geiger wasn't a part of this,
yeah.
Was the set pieces in number two.
Mm.
I find so terrifying that look of like those walls with almost
like the cocoon style walls and the it's like a hive now. Yeah, you're right.
They're making it theirs, and it's like the perfect camouflage too, because like there's that one part where when they're first going into the reactor level to try and figure out what happened to the people. And just that one alien just kind of pops out of the wall and just grabs
yoink! Oh, yeah. And he had the explosives, too, and that's been all.
Yeah,
that's no good.
Yeah.
But it's a terrifying look. And, I mean, it's very, very Geiger. And those set pieces weren't in, like... There was nothing like that in the first film.
Yeah, so. The first one was just the ship, just a regular ship. A lot of stainless steel, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, next gripe that I have with this film.
All right.
Is the kind of cop-out nature of just how do we... ramp this up? Well, let's just make more aliens. I hear this fairly commonly too. Now, I don't concur with this one, but I do hear it fairly commonly that they decided, you know, that people have gripes with the fact that what they loved about the first one was this unstoppable force, and then in the second film they are much like we talked about with the Terminator episode. As you progress through the sequels, they seem to get increasingly easier to kill. For a time, and then they kind of revert back as we get into some of the later films and so forth. And they're not wrong. I don't give a fuck, but they're not wrong. And same with the ensemble cast growing much larger. Now, I understand why. Again, I'm not complaining about it, but a lot of people do say that this is everything that they loved about the first film is gone from the second film.
Yeah, but James Cameron's smart like that. He's not going to make the same movie that Ridley Scott did so they can be compared to.
Yeah.
So he had a completely different approach, so you can't really get mad at him.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? He knew. If he wrote Alien again, people would be like, what? Hold on.
Was that a working title?
That's the exact same movie I just saw. So he went, fuck it. Let's just, you know, get some guns this time, and then no one can compare it.
Yeah.
And then we'll make some big-ass thing at the end. And
that's the... Yeah.
Yeah, and then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And they're, like, easier to kill, but also because they have such crazy weapons. And the first one, they didn't really have much weaponry. They just had that flamethrower. So this kind of a, you know, different spin on it, where there's more of them, but they got more hardware to take care of them with. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
And they got that tank.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That looks like the original Batmobile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fucking solid.
Yeah, I like that thing.
I love that thing.
I think it's kind of a, like, we've talked about this before, but kind of the perfect formula for a sequel to you know, a suspenseful kind of small-scale first film, or smaller-scale first film. Like, the way we talk about, or what the discussion we had around Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Where Jurassic Park 1... it's building towards this reveal of, you know, like, not showing you the raptors, just showing you the thing coming up, and the T-Rex taking so long to, you know, they're just waiting there watching a goat. And then all of a sudden, when it gets screen time, it's amazing. But then in the second film, you've seen dinosaurs.
Yeah.
What are you going to show me now? So you raise the stakes, and now it's not about, you know, one T-Rex or anything like that. It's about every dinosaur all over the goddamn place.
Mm.
And in the same way.
And you're having fun in that world as opposed to just existing in that same world that the first film created.
Exactly. And I mean, I think Aliens is like the perfect formula for a sequel in that regard, where it's just like you raise the stakes so much on both sides, like just so many more people involved, so many more aliens involved. And actually, you know, in the first movie, the suspense was created by, like, you know, this is a crew that's unprepared for what they're facing. And the second one, it's like, you're totally prepared. So what would happen? Like, you still get your ass kicked because aliens are awesome.
Yeah. These are all very valid points, but I think I actually figured it out while you guys were talking. And so I've dismissed all your ideas.
Oh, so you weren't listening to us.
Wonderful. Thanks.
My thought is that because the xenomorph is dependent on the host, well, actually, just John Hurt is so fucking amazing that you can't kill him, and so his subsequent xenomorph is just better than every other xenomorph. It makes sense to me. I don't know.
I was really hope, like, this is gonna sound bad, but I was really hoping that kid had one in, like, the one of the aliens.
Yeah,
because that would just, like, change, like, the whole movie.
Like, she was an incubator?
Like, she, you know what I mean? Because that would just make it so, like, dramatic. Like, oh, that poor kid.
Especially just the nature of the relationship with Ripley, because Newt is, like, the surrogate for her daughter who died.
Like, 900 years, 50, yeah. 56
yeah.
years, whatever.
Yeah, and I love that as well, that it's just... In the original cut, it's literally just like, your daughter's dead. Okay, so aliens... You know, and then people complain in the fucking director's cut about how it's drawn out. Like, literally, it's they did less than the military would, and, like, send you a letter, thank you, whatever. It's just, your daughter's dead. Fuck you.
We found her. She's dead. Oh, okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Your daughter died of old age while you were in space, not aging.
Floating around. Yeah. That would suck, too.
Yeah. Just... No one wants to outlive their children,
especially now in that circumstances.
No, especially while you're
I'm 150 like, years old now.
She looks so fucking good for 150, bad. Though.
That's, yeah,
that's is, a that yeah. that is a fucking MILF right there. That's
valid
what that
point.
Is.
This is true.
Yeah,
a great
a gilf.
Oh god,
the triple
great,
G.
Great gilf.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of G's on that gilf.
I'd do her.
Bold statement.
Yeah, no, it's that's I not. Concur entirely.
We're,
I don't care.
I kind of, I like that though as like I was saying, you know, Paul Reiser being one of my favorite pieces of the second film.
Yeah,
the fact that that's like, you know,
yeah,
he's
can't
so,
even empathize.
He's so nonchalant like, about it. He's like, do you know how long you were asleep? Like,
oh, did nobody tell you?
Yeah. Like, yeah, did nobody? Like, yeah, everybody's dead.
Yeah, deal with it.
Everything
you
know,
because we got this.
Everyone that you've ever known, oh, they're long gone. Like you got nothing to worry about. This
we're
is
your only
fresh
friends
start
now.
To you.
Yeah, yeah.
And
she just picks up and gets a job. All right, so my daughter's dead. Better update my resume. Yeah.
The last entries from like 1994. Last I was a hostess, I was a bartender. So let me drive that fucking power loader, will ya?
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. I love that fucking scene.
The power loader is sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, like it seems kind of, it's not very utilitarian in design, I will admit. But it's fucking wicked.
I don't like the foreshadowing that it does, because you know you're like, oh, she's definitely going to need that later. Like, thank God she's got a, you know, a license for it, because she's going to need that.
If she didn't have a license, she wouldn't be allowed to use it.
Oh, no.
She's just trying to start it. Can't even find the propane bottle. Where do we turn this fucking thing on?
When they're doing the presentation at the beginning, when they're talking about like what the mission is, when she's in the and when she's
explaining what she did,
because
at that point they're trying to put her in jail for destroying the drone.
Yeah, they haven't talked.
She's
about
trying.
The
they're
yet.
Reviewing the whole thing as to why she destroyed the
drone.
They're smoking
spacecraft.
In space again, though, aren't they? Isn't like that boardroom is just full of smoke again?
Yeah.
Guys,
I think one was smoking a cigar.
They didn't know about vaping and stuff back then, like when they made the film.
Yeah,
25% of this space station is just oxygen scrubbers. Yeah. Everybody on board is just hacking darts like 18 hours a day.
Yeah,
well, they're all immortal.
It's the future.
Now.
We cured cancer. Why do you think we did that?
Yeah.
so we can smoke.
We have little robots in our blood that heal us. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Dude. Oh, shit. We're doing a podcast right now.
I like the idea of... I know they just did this for just to make the visuals better so no one's wearing big helmets and stuff like that. But the idea of that atmosphere generator, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
It kind of had to happen, though, because if they were all wearing the same outfit that they went in number one, there'd be no chance.
And
you
also
can't move. You're getting caught on everything. Shit. No thanks. So.
And also, you always have this problem in all seriousness where you just have you'd have a fucking room full of actors being like, well, why the fuck am I in this movie then if no one's going to see my face?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to do a round of favorite scenes, gentlemen?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll go last this time, so don't
Okay. DeAnge, you want to kick us off?
Bill Paxton falling apart.
Yeah.
Just.
And like the kid being there with the fucking helmet on, just so chill. Like fucking Newt is having no problem with this, and you are being a little dandy about it.
Game over, man. They're talking about how fucked up everything is, and everybody, like, it's finally at a point where it's like, you have hope for so long, we've got a goddamn battle cruiser in space. Like, how could this possibly?
Yeah, and it's been them up to this point just being so fucking confident until that first confrontation, and they just he immediately falls apart. Yeah, sorry.
He talks shit about Newt during that whole diatribe, doesn't he?
Yeah. Like, why doesn't...
Stupid fucking kid, shut up!
No, because... how does it work? Ripley says that this little girl survived on this ship for however many days, et cetera, et cetera.
Not a ship, the colony.
The colony for however many days. And then without weaponry, and then he said, well, okay, we'll, like, send her after.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. So, yeah, he talks shit about Newt, but who doesn't? You know, it's not the best character. And...
Well, he gets mad when she says affirmative. He's like, you don't even know what that fucking means.
Amazing.
I like that, too, that whole sequence where... Because at first you think he's going to be one of the tougher guys because he's teasing Vasquez and all this shit. You're like, oh, this guy's going to be like the fucking bro of the movie.
Yeah.
And then you're right. He just,
he falls apart. Yeah. And it's so interesting how in that very scene, it's you get Michael Biehn's kind of separation from the rest of the cast for the first time, which is so cool because up until that point, as much as you kind of get the impression that he's... there's a romantic stirring between Ripley and him. Like, it's just, that's the first moment that you actually see this kind of, flushed out character or fleshed out character being defined instead of just another soldier, you know, which is so interesting and makes him my favorite. Like, that moment is where everything changes in that film. Much like kind of halfway through the first film, Ripley all of a sudden just takes over. Not that Ripley didn't just take over from the start in this film, but you get to see another character who just takes control much in the same way that Ripley did in the first. And it's great. It's great. But that's not my scene. Dave, you're next.
There's two... For different reasons, I'll be brief. I like Gorman when he's sitting in the tank and he's kind of telling everyone what to do, but he's doing nothing.
Yeah.
He's completely dropping the ball, and he's just, you can see him panicking. Like, I didn't think I'd get into this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and tell him to shoot the flamethrower. Or whatever.
Yeah, and then Ripley starts driving. He's like, "What the fuck? Are you fucking serious? We're not going in there, you stupid bitch! Fucking forget about it." And then he gets knocked out. I like that too because he's supposed to be the leader, and he's just gonna let his team die because he doesn't want to sacrifice himself. He's the absolute opposite of what a commander, whoever's in charge, should ever be.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And then for a brief scene, just for the visual effect, is when Newt's in the sewer, and then it comes out of the water. Like the way that cool they brought it up tail first, like whoever the puppeteer was for that, because like it'd be a guy in a suit, but there'd also be somebody pulling on the tail,
yeah,
to make it move. Whoever the puppeteer was or whoever the team was that did that, it moved perfectly, it flowed, and it was terrifying.
Absolutely,
because you knew something was gonna happen, but I didn't think something would be right there, and then now you know it can swim and be silent. You're like, okay, these things can fucking swim now.
Mm.
So when Alien Resurrection came out, it was like, oh yeah, they can swim.
We already know this. So, yeah.
Anyway, so those two, I know I don't get
not even
two,
sharks but, are safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Gorman kind of foreshadowed. I always love just. There's this whole crew of like really tough mercenaries, and he's like sweating buckets on the dropship, and they're like, "How many drops is this for you? 38.
Simulated. Yeah.
How many combat drops? Two, including this one.
Yeah. Oh fuck! And that's how you know that they're up to no good. They're sending a fucking bullshit expendable team. Yeah. They're not going to send out fucking Zero Dark 30 after these guys because they're actually going to find like do a good job. So they're like, just pick him because he's only done the flight simulators and it shows.
Yeah.
How does he? Oh, he dies with Vazquez and with the grenade. Yeah.
And that's his kind of redeemer moment.
Yeah,
as
take
well.
One for the team because I really fucked up. And I'm going to kill Vazquez, too.
Yeah.
So.
Which is sad.
It's a very touching moment.
Yeah.
She was a badass chick. She killed a lot.
Oh, Vazquez is just the fucking best, man.
And she's like the stepmom from Terminator 2. Yeah. Pretty cool. Janine or Janelle?
Janelle.
Sorry to bring us down that road.
No, that's fine. Great movie. Jesse?
And, I guess one of my favorite scenes would be when they have all the automated gun turrets set up and they only got like X amount of ammo.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the first times I saw in a movie where they actually took ammo into consideration, where it wasn't just like this thing will just fire forever.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh shit, like when they run out of ammo, this gun is useless. So I remember that kind of stuck with me when I was a kid, and I actually kind of feared for them at that point and was like, oh no, like, because at first I thought, okay, well, they got these guns, they're fine.
Yeah.
And it's like 20% left. I'm like, oh. 1% left, and it's like they only got like 5 bullets left, but then they all stop, and it's like, oh shit, are they gonna stop coming now? Or like, I don't know, that's just one of the scenes that stuck with me, I'd say.
Can I jump in here for a minute? Okay, I like the scene, but I don't like how they're all looking at the screen, and he's like, A gun's down 50%, and they're like, we're watching the same screen as you. We fucking know. We're like, oh, 20, 10, and they're like, thanks, thank you, I didn't fucking see that. But sorry,
it's all good.
I do like the scene. I wasn't knocking it.
No, for sure.
But if that were me, I'd be like, shut up. Stop reminding me. Just shut up. I can see
of
it.
Our impending death.
Yeah, so we're dead soon,
The ammo thing seems to be a recurring tension builder that they use, because it's the same. Like, I've always loved the design of the pulse rifle. It has that little red LCD on the side that tells you how many are left. And so whenever they're in one of those intense fight scenes, you always see it, like, counting down, like... You're almost at the end, like just really
amazing.
It's a clip the size of like a 3-shell shotgun, and it holds 99 rounds.
Yeah,
fucking awesome.
Or when they take the ammo away from everybody at that one scene, those giant guns that Drake and Vazquez have, it's like a little like tube connector. Yeah. Like it's the weirdest looking thing.
Give us
like,
your one bullet.
Give us your clips. Yeah.
Shotguns only.
Yeah. Okay, so there's so many in this film. I love the knife scene, which apparently Paxton didn't know that they were going to use his hand for that. And it's great because this is a nice change from the first film, because you know, of course, that Bishop is an android, right? So it's a completely different thing. Lance Hendrickson is great as Bishop and completely... You like the character. You like him more than most of the humans. So that's a great moment. And that whole sequence is fantastic because they shot all the shit at the end, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because so that they all be like buddy buddy, as opposed to at the beginning.
Well,
he sent
them all
right?
for proper military training too. So they had like 3 weeks of camp
together.
Mm-hmm. So they all were, except Michael Biehn. He wasn't there.
No,
because he wasn't part of the.
Yeah.
It was that I forget the actor's name. Dexter's dad.
Whatever. Yeah, he plays the guy that gets arrested on the park bench in Warriors. James Rem.
All right. He's also okay. fucking Raiden in Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. They replaced
the him. Only scenes that they used of him was scenes from the back when they're shooting, when they're loading up, when they're loading up the weapons before they go in the drop ship. Yeah, Raymar.
Yeah.
James Raiden. All right.
Lord
so,
of Thunder.
So James Raymar.
So yeah, they had a beef with him. Headphones on backwards now. So, but if you notice the scene but when they're loading up the drop ship from the Sulaco, you don't see Michael Biehn because it was filmed with that guy.
Yeah,
so the back shots of him are actually James
Raymar.
Raymar.
Yeah.
And then they had a beef with him and they're like, "Okay, well, you're fired and yeah. I'm going to bring back Michael Biehn."
Because he's the shit.
He is awesome.
Yeah.
He's so good, he'll never work again.
Well, before I get to my favorite scene, then, let's get into a little tangent here, people. Why the fuck isn't Michael Biehn working more? Like, I know he's working.
Didn't we do this one already?
No, fuck
Terminator
it.
Terminator 1?
We're doing it again. You know, besides, as a child at least, the scene in The Rock that he's in and gets fucking blown away. And he's just a military guy again. It blows my mind that this fucking cat isn't getting more work because, as we talked about, as Danny said, he has like the best fucking worried and panicked look of all time in an action film. You know, just he's amazing at defining a sense of urgency. Yeah, it's the best. He's the best. Love this fucking cat.
He really should be like a leading man. Or at least he should have been after that. Like, he kind of just went into obscurity almost.
Yeah.
The last job he had was the interviews for the special edition re-release of Aliens. I think that was it.
Yeah.
That's it. They're like, okay, we need you just to talk about it, and then you're back to being laid off. Like, you know, then call the employment insurance for the next 40 years. I like the guy.
Yeah.
Actually, the last thing he worked on was The Scorpion King 4, yep. Quest for Power.
Oh, no.
Straight to video. Scorpion King 4, straight to video.
They made four of those movies?
Yep.
Jesus.
Quest for maybe 25 grand? I don't know.
That poor bastard.
Quest for Power. Fuck off.
Hopefully, what the fuck happened to you, man?
I got into meth. Well,
apparently, he is actually, Untitled Neil Blomkamp, Alien Project. I mean, I don't know what validity
that's on hold. Ridley Scott put the kibosh on that shit.
Which
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
On what?
God damn it.
He's going to make Prometheus 2.
Yeah.
called Alien.
So Blomkamp can't do his fucking Alien.
Yeah, that's
which
sick.
In all seriousness... Like, I have mixed emotions about Blomkamp. Like,
Alien Covenant, I think it's called.
I just feel like his first film's his best, and he just keeps getting worse and worse.
He'll never make a movie as good as District 9, I don't think.
No,
I like that.
I like Chappie. Yeah, that was kind of fun.
Chappie.
I am Chappie.
Yeah, but that's just... Chappie is good.
Yeah.
Everyone else in that fucking film and everything else in that film, which is Sigourney Weaver. Fantastic. A little tie-in with this episode.
She's in that movie.
Makes no fucking sense, man. Like, it just doesn't... You can't suspend disbelief that fucking much.
And they make South Africa look like a real shithole. Like, it's just everything is violence and guns and everyone's a gangster and shit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know...
Whatever.
He's okay. No District 9.
Yeah. Where the fuck were we? You had a thought before I get into my favorite scene, right? Devin, you were going to say something?
It was like 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay. I was gonna say. Scorpion King 4.
Yep.
Scorpion King 4.
That's the next episode, right?
Yeah, that's coming up next week.
quest for power. quest for paycheck. Getting power... Reconnected in Michael Biehn's apartment.
Quest for not bouncing the paychecks.
Yeah.
Is The Rock in that movie?
No fucking way.
Nope.
No fucking chance.
The Rock walked by that movie one time in Walmart.
In the bin.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, fuck. That's beautiful.
One thing I did want to bring up... the end sequence, the Queen Alien, fight. What do you think? What do you guys think about that? Because here's what I've always like, even from a very young age, this has always been how I've always wanted to see that happen. So you can leave the fight in because it's a great fight. Seeing that power loader versus the alien queen, but have her wake up again, just like so worried, and you know, have her explain this to like Hicks or Bishop or something. Bishop, and then he calms her down and says like, look, like that thing was like 30 feet tall. Like it's if it came back with us, we would know. You know, talking about how it's too big. It's too big for us to miss.
Yeah.
And then, as they're getting into the pods, then you see the facehugger that they managed to get on.
Yeah.
He stresses how big it is, that how big the queen is, that they couldn't possibly miss it.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
yeah,
foreshadows how, you know, how this one tiny little facehugger got onto the ship.
Something like that, yeah. It's interesting.
Because... God, that end scene really, really shits all over the rest of the movie, doesn't it?
Like, why?
Are we talking about when she has drop to ship leaves and somehow the queen that's bigger than the drop ship it's like holding onto the side? Like, like a fucking garbage truck? Like, is that what's really happening? That's what I always wondered. I'm like I love the fight scene, but I'm like, okay, where the fuck did that come from? Like, how the fuck did that? They'd feel they're over their max weight, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, they're only allowed, like, six people on a drop ship or whatever the military is. That thing weighs about 4 tons. And then, so, something ain't right here. Ah, fuck it. It's probably just the garbage man.
But it's like... And they land back on the ship, and it waits until the perfect suspenseful moment to just tear Bishop in half. And, like...
Yeah, instead of, like, as soon as it lands, just gets off. Yeah, I don't know. I hate and like at the same time, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
When it rips Bishop in half, that's pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
That's pretty one of the coolest parts.
But,
of the movie.
Okay, we have to go here since we're on this topic. I know movies in Hollywood are always, you know, they always bend the rules, but she opens the door. And holds on.
Yeah.
And not only holds on, climbs the ladder. Like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And they've designed it so you can open the door from inside the fucking, where they drop all the shit or whatever they don't need. So you have to roll your window down, push the buttons, and hope you don't die. I don't get it.
Doesn't she catch the Bishop torso too?
Grabs onto the grating and Bishop grabs Newt.
Right. Newt. That's the Taylor role.
And he's like, "Can you stop screaming in my ear, please?" It'd be funny if Michael Biehn woke up during that because they had him strapped down in the induced coma, but he didn't know. He takes his seatbelt off and then he goes flying. They come back, they're like, "He was here a minute ago." And then instead of the scene where you see the queen flying through space, it's Michael Biehn. He's fucking waving his hands. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't hate the scene, you know? I think it's a cool fight for sure. But I just don't like it.
I'm sweating now.
Dave, that's the longest that I haven't spoken in like 4 episodes. So, bravo.
Oh, man. Somebody must have left the fan out. It's a little drafty in here.
Sorry, you were saying
what?
Well, no. I don't know. I mean, I don't hate the fight scene. I just hate
how it happened.
Yeah, how you explain that. It's
yeah, the end of the film does feel a little bit like a race to the finish line. It does have that little bit of a
tempo change. More, yeah.
Here's my other idea for the recut ending. Mm. It's not the queen alien. It's an alien Paul Reiser. Paul Reiser's face on an alien. Comes back.
No. An alien face with the mouth of Paul Reiser's face. That comes out. So when it opens up, it's just Paul Reiser that comes out of the mouth.
Like, hey, Ripley.
You're like, hey, guys, you want to go back and like check it out again? Like, we, you know. Oh, jeez. That's the stupidest thing I've ever said. Like, I can't believe you still invite me back to this.
No, it's Paul Reiser's face on the alien that he opens his mouth and a little Paul Reiser face comes out.
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez. Oh, or like the egg opens up and it's Paul Reiser in the egg. And it's just running around the ship on all fours.
Paul Reiser bursts out of the dude's chest and goes, hey, guys, what's going on?
did you guys hear something? Ah, it's fucking Paul Reiser again. Like, fuck. Get out of here.
All right. Final thoughts on Aliens, gentlemen?
It's a good movie, but I like it less every time I watch it, I find.
Really?
Yeah. Loved it as a kid, and now I watch it, and it's good, but I don't know. I always debated which one I like better, but now it's definitive. Alien I like better, so.
Okay, well, that's next segment, so thank you for ruining the...
All right, I jumped ahead.
Dave, any final thoughts, sir?
Final thoughts. As I said, I like the idea that they went a completely different route in order to save the comparison, and... I don't know. It was a good way for James Cameron to get out of that fucking hot water.
Yeah. And yet, did they really save the comparison? Because we're doing the fucking episode, episode because people want to fucking talk about it.
We are, but it's... I don't know.
Yeah.
Ah, fuck it. Whatever.
Good save.
Good movie.
Good try.
Good movie.
Devin, any final thoughts on Aliens?
It was the first I saw, actually, as a kid... so it's always the one that's kind of stuck with me. I don't know. I agree with you, Jesse. I do like it less each time I see it. Absolutely. But it's still got a long way to go before
it's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it funnier too, as I watch it, as much as maybe the action doesn't seem as breakneck pace-wise or aesthetically pleasing or any of these things, it does somehow end up being funnier each time. Yeah. Like, I missed something every time. In any case, let's take a little break, come back, and decide, at least for us here at Mermal, which is the best, Alien or Aliens. All right, so just a quick story for you guys. On March 25th, Good Friday, by noon, I had more emails and Twitter messages than I've ever gotten for any of our episodes. And as you might have guessed it, they were all about Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, sharing your opinions, asking us what we thought of it. And because of all those emails, we're going to take the show that was scheduled for next week, we're going to push it back a week, and next Wednesday, we'll be talking Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
And we're back.
We are back. Okay. So, the moment of truth.
Why don't you start us off here?
Yeah,
Let's change it up.
I never do, yeah.
Let's change it up.
Because then that means that everyone's already quiet when I need to get to the next thing. Next thing? Like, I have two things written down on this piece of paper, and we've talked about them both. So.
I didn't write anything. I'd never write anything down when I come here.
No.
I probably should, because the Batman one, sorry guys, I was not prepared for that.
You were good. That was a really fun episode.
Good save, but I forgot about Batman forever.
What is forever?
Forever. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
Okay.
We don't have to. I just,
let's change it up. Let's keep things fresh, you know. Always.
We'll have a drum roll for Devin instead.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Anybody can hear that.
No. I don't think that there is actually going to be any suspense.
No, there's no suspense here.
Yeah.
The first one is definitively my favorite. It's my second favorite Ridley Scott film after Blade Runner, and it's fucking perfect, man. Like, I go back and watch this film pretty much annually. Like, you know, every fall kind of thing. Somehow it's starting to get cold in Toronto, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to go and fucking scare the shit out of myself and sweat it out. Yeah, that sounds like I'm masturbating watching. In any case.
You're thinking of the scene that we were talking about with Sigourney Weaver getting dressed.
Yeah. Brilliant fucking movie. Everything's great. I love the use of the lighting. The lighting's so effectively done. The acting's on point. The bait and switch, I still remember the first time I saw it and how effective that was. Just the alien still looks great. I don't agree with you on that, Dave. Your comments from earlier that it looks cool. Yeah.
I didn't mean it doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. I just mean... it, you know, it looks a little bit dated, but how are you going to avoid that? I didn't mean it looked shitty, but it just the metal melt and the way it moves, you can feel that it's moved by cable.
Yeah.
Right. And I didn't mean to shit on it. Yeah. If that's what you're getting at.
But, it's one of my favorite sci-fi films of all time. It's one of my favorite horror films of all time. No comparison. Love the second one. Paxton's great. Fucking Bean is the man. Sigourney Weaver is, you know, the archetype for female action protagonists. And in many ways, I don't think maybe Linda Hamilton up there as well. Maybe some, you know, Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia. But like, I don't. Ripley's on a whole nother level for me, man. And her character, watching her make that transformation, all happens in the first one. So, one, definitively, Alien. Jesse?
Well, I already let the cat out of the bag, and I'm going to have to go with Alien as the superior film. It's the one that I can still watch today, and it gets me. As soon as I start watching it, I'm in. Like, it has me transfixed. I know what's going to happen, but, you know, I'm with it every step of the way. When I watch Aliens, you know, sometimes I get a little distracted. I'll be Facebooking or whatever, and it's just like a dumb, fun action movie, which is still good, and I still enjoy it, but... And as Devin said, I think Aliens I watched first because I think Alien 3 was coming out, and that's when I really started learning more about the Alien movies and stuff. And I loved it as a kid, and then I went back and watched Alien. And when I was a kid, I liked Aliens better.
Of course, everyone does.
Your attention span is a lot different when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. But then going forward and just watching Alien as not even just a sci-fi movie, but as you said, a horror movie, it really defined the slasher genre. Like a lot of the slasher movies of the 80s really took that whole, you know, stalker character that you don't actually see. And one by one, they're picking off each character. And there's the jump scare with the cat, which is like a very definitive slasher movie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And to this day, every time I put on Alien, I'm just loving it. So yeah, Alien is my favorite of the series.
Excellent. Dave.
Alien as well. It's probably my favorite sci-fi movie ever, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's well done. It stands the test of time. Like, obviously, the computers, you know, they had no idea what things were going to look like. And you can't ever hold that against them. The sets were good. The old DOS programs kind of still make me laugh a bit. But again, like, you can never, ever say anything about that. Love the movie. Jones the cat, a nice little... additive, because that gives her a reason to fucking you know, make some of the decisions she was making. And it gave her,
it is what it is,
as a character, like a personal side too.
Yeah. I hear a lot of people fucking complaining that she seems to like that cat more than the fucking other people on the ship.
Well,
to which,
don't you?
No fucking shit. I feel the same way.
That cat, though.
If I had my...
She calls an idiot and stuff.
Still, she also thinks her entire crew is fucking idiots because she wanted to, you know.
I like, oh, man, can we go back to favorite scenes? No. The look on the cat's face when the alien first kills that, what the fuck's his name? Give me that thing. The guy that goes looking for him.
Harry Dean Stanton.
Harry Dean Stanton, yeah.
Yeah, the look on Jones' face, like, wow, that is fucked. I like that. So, anyway, back to... I got major ADD today. Alien 1 is the best. Hands down. Moving on.
Devin?
You have to pick Aliens, dude. or not.
Yeah. I mean...
Go with your heart, Devin. Just, you don't have to fake it for the show.
It works far better as a horror film. I mean, it works far better when you don't see an alien every 5 minutes on screen. It works so much better when there isn't a fight between a forklift and a 20-foot-tall alien at the end. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
There's so many things. Not that the fight's not good, but again, for the reasons that we've already gone over, it's, you know, it's annoying. For all those reasons, I mean, I couldn't possibly pick the second movie as the best. And I do, like you were saying, I love that retro future look. There's a game that was made recently, a video game that I strongly recommend everybody take a look at. What is this? Alien Isolation. Yeah.
I have that game.
I played the first couple hours, and I just... have so many other games to play, but I forgot it existed.
It's,
so
it's scary. Fucking, dude.
I think I have to go back and play that now.
Aesthetic too, yeah. Where yeah. it's they just kept that the, retro kind of 70s future where you know they're not using their highest tech on this because it's a goddamn.
They wanted to keep
truck,
you in the universe,
you know?
Of the first film. That was the idea.
Yeah,
I love that game. It's still, yeah, it's terrifying.
Amazing. All right. So, definitive across the board.
Yep.
Alien sweeps Aliens. Not a surprise for me. And to be honest, I hope it's not a surprise to anybody out there. But I know that we do get that
I was
question.
Hoping somebody would say Aliens so we could start a brawl.
Yeah, so we could tear them apart.
Like, yeah.
Fucking great films, though, man. Both of them. Dig them a lot. Watch them pretty much every year. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah,
that's about it.
Okay. Before we get into it, because this is kind of an impromptu episode, we added it to the slate a little bit later, just, you know, based on popular opinion here, to get this into the rotation. Anyone want to plug anything? Anyone want to do anything? We don't usually do that, and it always pisses me off afterwards because we always have all these amazing artists, musicians, photographers, fucking creative people on the show, and no one. I always just like, all right, get out.
Well, actually, that's something I'm working on right now. It's a video game show called Abandonware.
Yeah.
It's on Vice's motherboard site. Look it up on Google. Just Google motherboard Abandonware. And what we do is we take a look at obscure, old, weird video games.
Sweet.
And kind of review them and kind of put a little, you know, our own little spin on it and stuff. The very first one we did was for the Sega Dreamcast, a game called Seaman, which was basically, imagine a Tamagotchi, but it's a fish and it has a human face and it talks shit to you the whole time. It makes jokes about banging your mother and like, so it's probably one of the weirdest games we could think of. It's a Japanese game that got ported over to America. So that's our first episode.
Right on.
So check that one out. And the latest one we just released a couple weeks ago was a game called Hunt the Wumpus for the Texas Instruments TI-99-4A
nice.
Home computer.
Nice.
I memorized that somehow. And that's one of the earlier sort of puzzle adventure game type things. The game itself is pretty cool, but the backstory behind the creator, I'm not going to get into it here. You got to go watch the episode. It's pretty bizarre. So, we're hopefully doing a few more episodes in the near future. So, yeah, check out Abandonware on Vice Motherboard.
Sweet. And Dave, when the fuck are you going to start playing again? I always say on the show, and it always somehow gets cut, that I always say... that Dave is one of my favorite guitar players because his playing style is completely fucking the opposite of his personality. He, you know, Dave is inherently, as you know, you guys all know, very brash and then his playing is this smooth, delicate, finesse style of playing.
Nice.
But like, and not indicative of the guy I know at all. And it's like this fucking transformation and you should be playing more music, sir.
Yeah. I'm actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I've been working on a lot of new ideas and stuff and getting that part of me back out there. I've just, in the last couple of years, I've been traveling so much with work and stuff. I've kind of shelved it and apologize, but I have something I've been working on, and hopefully next time I'm on, I can give you some more information.
Sweet.
So,
and it's Twitter,
so yeah, well, thanks for bringing
like.
That up, actually, because now it's going to kick my ass to get it, you know,
yeah.
get going on it.
Yeah, we've done that before, too. I remember putting a bumper in one of the episodes that before we aired, it was like, our website is finally up.
Yeah.
We didn't have a fucking website at all.
You're like, nice. Great, now we got to do it. Fuck, I wanted to sleep in tomorrow.
All right.
That was fun. Thanks for having me.
Right
it was
on.
Really fun.
So remember, this is just the beginning of the conversation. We want to continue it on with you. So, and we do because we've already been having it. That's why we're having this episode. So you can find us on Twitter. You guys want to offer up your Twitters or whatevers?
I think I have one. I can't remember what it is, though.
Instagram, what, anything?
No.
No?
I'm the most boring person here. I don't have any of that shit.
Yeah, but you're at Thack Attack, right? On Instagram?
Right. I forget how to spell. How do I spell it? Normally?
Yeah, normally, I think. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thack Attack.
We'll have a link on the website and on the show notes. So if you're interested in reaching out to either Jesse or Dave, go to the website, moviesformylife.com. Go to the show notes for this episode, Alien versus Aliens. And... click on their fucking name because it'll be a link to somewhere, and that'll be how you find them on ye olde interweb. Devin, you want to offer up your Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at YR_homeboy. It's your homeboy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they can see your very... Yeah, fuck it, whatever. Yeah, you want my Twitter? Yeah, fuck, here you go. Fuck, take it. I don't give a shit.
All right.
Five tweets, they're all retweets.
And I'm at Not Brandon Fleet, and you can also visit the Movies from My Life Twitter, which is at Mermal Podcast, at MRML Podcast. If you're listening to us on iTunes, we're also on, or on whatever podcatching device, we're also on YouTube. We just did a huge backhaul of all the previous episodes, or overhaul of all the previous episodes. So everything's up there to check out clips from all the stuff you've heard before and some new stuff. And also, if you're listening, or sorry, if you're not listening to us and you're watching a video clip or something like that, you can subscribe, rate, review, follow, all that shit that you should do if you're nice people, and we would do it for you. So on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or TuneIn, anywhere that podcasts can be listened to, we're there. So find us and follow us, and we'll be your friends. And I think that's about it, gentlemen. So thanks for hanging out with us.
Game over, man.